Welcome back to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, just before the holidays, local documentary house Kertemkwin Films announced a change in leadership just after Justine Nagin left for POV. The new executive director, Betsy Steinberg. Steinberg's no stranger to film production in Chicago and the state of Illinois. She just came off an eight-year run as the head of the Illinois Film Office and is credited with almost doubling film revenue by adding TV shows like Chicago Fire and Chicago PD and ushering in the age of Transformers. Now she hopes to transform Kertemkwin. Yeah, that was a terrible pun. Betsy Steinberg was let go at the state when Governor Rauner took over in 2015. Now she turns her attention to the Northside Documentary Film Company that has produced huge films like Hoop Dreams, The Interrupters, and Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary. Also includes series like Hard Earned, which just won a DuPont. Betsy's currently on the job alongside founder and artistic director Gordon Quinn. Quinn was one of the founding members of the company that started in 1966. 2016, the 50th anniversary of Kertemkwin. Betsy Steinberg, Gordon Quinn, welcome to The Download. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
So Betsy, I mean, this is a month on the job here.
So I started December 1, and, you know, it's kind of fun to start a job when there's lots of holiday parties going on all over town. And one of the most exciting things was my fifth day in, we went to Los Angeles, where Gordon got an honor from the International Documentary Association. And it was a really, really great preview of so much exciting work we have coming down the pike, and a really great way to start off a new chapter that I'm really excited about and feel really, really lucky.
Let me ask you, I mean, why Kertemkwin? You have a lot of opportunities. I mean, obviously coming off the film office, there's ways you can go. You can go work in the industry in L.A., but what drew you to this company?
That's a great question, Justin, and I think a few things. One is that my heart has always lied in the documentary world. My very first job out of college was actually on a documentary, and I've always been drawn to nonfiction storytelling. And likewise, I am very, very committed to Chicago. The fact that Chicago is home to an organization at the caliber of Kertemkwin, I feel really fortunate. And I've been a fan of Kertemkwin's work for, you know, 25 years. Mm-hmm. And when this opportunity arose, it was sort of a no-brainer for me that I just had to throw my hat in the ring.
Let me ask you, Gordon. I mean, congrats on 50 years. But why Betsy? I mean, for the company, Justine leaving, I mean, it's got a very independent flair. Social justice is a big part of what you guys have done. Why turn to Betsy to run the ship from the Illinois Film Office?
Well, we were looking for someone who, you know, had some familiarity with what we do. But I think, you know, we are a regional company with an international footprint. I think it's really important that we have someone who has worked in the region, knows the region, and knows the industry here in Chicago. We really see ourselves as a part of the Midwest.
Michael Phillips had the great piece, congratulations, Chicago of the Year in Film. But there was a great part in there where it said, you know, to get an understanding of the office, there's a sign on the wall that says heat equals dollar sign. You know, like it's not your typical Hollywood glass door kind of open up film company where, you know, long tables and the whole And what about working in this kind of environment in a much smaller, much more boutique way drew you to it?
Well, like I said, I've always been really engaged in the documentary world. And frankly, when I was working for the state, I wasn't working at a Hollywood studio. That was public service, so I wasn't used to big fancy offices anyway. Never in my career.
You were always a guest. You were in the waiting room.
Yes,
going
correct,
in,
right? Correct. And I think that the work that Kertemkwin does, I think it's often very entertaining, but more importantly, it's impactful and meaningful. It's work that I have been drawn to since the beginning of my career.
What do you think Kertemkwin needs? You know, as a company, and Chicagoans know this company very well. 50 years, for anyone who's been involved at any level of arts and culture in this town has come across Kertemkwin, whether it be the big hits like Hoop Dreams or some of the stuff that the series that we talked about, like Hard Earned. What do you think the company needs? Because it has sustained itself for 50 years.
Well, it's beyond sustaining itself. It has done an amazing job of growing and growing while staying true to its mission, which I think is a very difficult challenge for a lot of mission-driven organizations. So I think what they need is continued leadership that is thinking about growth, but not growth for growth's sake, growth to reach more people, more stories, to communicate with more and more large groups of people about issues that are important, and about and finding a way to embrace the new technology and figure out ways of taking the art form of documentary and, you know, making it work with the new media landscape.
Gordon, let me ask you, I mean, you're 50 years now. What does Kartemkwa need for the next 50 years?
One of the reasons that we're still here after 50 years is we don't keep doing the same thing. We have transformed ourselves many times in that 50 years. In the late 60s and 70s, we were a collective. We were all even reading Mao. We were, going to change the world. Well, in terms of mission and vision, we're still trying to change the world. But how you go about that changes with the times, changes with the period of history you're in. You know, when Hoop Dreams hit so big, we really understood, hey, we're able to actually get people to watch a film about people that they might not be sympathetic to or might not come in contact with, but we can use the emotional power of storytelling to reach out to people who maybe and change their mind a little bit, open them up. So we keep evolving and changing. And under Justine's leadership, Kartemkwa grew into a new kind of organization. And I think what's going to happen with Betsy here is we're going to transform ourselves again. The mission, the underlying goals remain very steadfast. But how we do it, what we do, it's very different from, like, in a sense, Hollywood, where they hit their franchise. Oh, well, that worked.
Right.
And now we're on Transformers 7 or whatever it is, you know. And it's like, no, if you look at Steve James's films, no two of them look exactly alike. There's certainly core values, certainly emotional aspects, certainly kind of commitment to verite storytelling. But what the films are about, how we tell the story, all of those things change. And so I think that's, in a sense, that's how we've survived.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I'd love to talk about some of the factors in documentary filmmaking that you're running up against, the challenges. It seems to me that I see more and more of the Hollywood apparatus turning towards documentary films, and it's creating a competitive landscape to tell the same stories. Gordon Quinn, who's the artistic director and founding member of Kartemkwa, Betsy Steinberg, the executive director, the new executive director here from Kartemkwa. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Gordon Quinn, Betsy Steinberg from Kartemkwa Films here in Chicago. Betsy just started as the new executive director on December 1st. You know, we're talking about the landscape of Chicago and what you guys do and making sure that you evolve as a company. With the idea of the internet being accessible on your television, on your computers, it seems like documentary films and production has exploded. It's not just, one channel like the Sundance Channel that you're competing with. Now you're in a way where it seems like everybody's making a documentary. I just think of sports programming. Is it a good thing that the audiences must be exploding for documentary production, that more people are investing in that kind of thing? Or is it a challenge for you guys?
I actually think it's a really good thing. It's a terrific thing that there's more and more places for documentaries. I think that sometimes people have a hard time understanding that what we do, it's like, there's this reality television. Well, that has nothing to do with what we do. And so sometimes and people do it. The reason that there's a lot of it is because it's cheap to produce. And so I know I'm often with funders or with a broadcaster, and they're saying, well, we're looking at your budget here, and you're taking twice as long to edit as everybody else. And I'm like, yeah, that's why our films are so good. it's not – we're not making sausage. And so I think that it's, finding our place within that broader landscape. But the broader landscape is terrific for us. And we're working with, new broadcasters and new people that we haven't worked before. Over the past 20 years, we've got a much broader footprint in the international marketplace.
One thing that I find fascinating about documentary production is the way that it's presented has changed as well. I mean, you're seeing with Making a Murderer or Serial does in radio, but the concept that serializing the documentary has become successful in mainstream America. What's the takeaway for Kertemkwin? Is that something that you could see yourself doing, where you're creating narrative storytelling or storytelling over serials as opposed to a series as opposed to just the documentaries?
Well, Kertemkwin has done some series work, and I think that one of the great things that this explosion of nonfiction media has done has really alerted people or put it right in front of them that real life and real stories are a lot of times as entertaining, as informative, as enlightening, or oftentimes much more so than narrative films. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think, sure, the idea of doing serialized projects is absolutely on the table.
Do you see? I mean, because I would assume companies like Netflix or Amazon or even the HBOs are seeing the success of some of these, like Making a Murderer, that kind of thing, and saying, we want it. I mean, you're in your boardrooms and you're deciding your boardrooms, your the bedroom that is the boardroom at Kertemkwin. I've been in the building.
Right.
When you're in there and you're like, we need to start thinking of ideas, you know, like here's some ideas for films. Do you think about the treatment of how you're going to tell that story at the beginning of that or in the middle? How does it work for you guys?
Well, you know, we're even involved in a series now. The Steve James's big new project is going to be a series. But I think the answer to that question is that's not quite the way that we do it. In other words, what we do is we start with something that someone has a passion for something they think is important, for a story they think is important to tell. We're looking at what's going on in the country in terms of the history and where we are in our democratic process and what would be important. It's like, we want to make this field what we want it to be, not to find a place that we can fit in. And so I don't ask what is it the broadcasters or the internet people or Netflix is looking for. I ask what do we think is important to do and how are we going to get them to show it?
Do you run into a problem because that is a great ethos. That's an awesome philosophy for any company and it's any product. But do you run into a problem when Hollywood's like, no, we want another vampire documentary?
Sure, you know? We always have that problem.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that it's not. I mean, when we were doing Hoop Dreams, we actually had a horrendous time raising money. Nobody seemed to understand what we were doing. Finally, the Minneapolis Public broadcast station got involved and they gave us a little bit of money. But the truth is we never would have gotten it done if it hadn't been for the MacArthur Foundation, who was here in Chicago, who came over to our funky little studio and looked at what we were doing and said, we get it. And they helped us get that finished. And once we got it finished and we took it to Sundance, the rest was history. But it's, you know, you have to take on those challenges. That's part of our mission. That's part of what we're about.
You guys have had tremendous relationship with Sundance, with other film festivals. Where the relationship hasn't been as strong as been with the Academy, with the Oscars. I mean, we've seen in Chicago as just, you know, reading the newspaper when the nominations come out. The Hoop Dream snubbed Roger Ebert. That was a huge part of his column after column about the snub. The Interrupters, which was one I scratched my head on. It's one of the best films I've ever seen. Life Itself just happened last year. What's the problem with Kertemkwin's relationship with Hollywood or with the Oscars in general that you guys keep getting the short end of the stick?
I don't know.
That's why Betsy's here, right?
Yeah. I got if I know.
Betsy, how do you fix that?
But I think it is, you know, yes, We have felt that, and sometimes we feel the sting of it. On the other hand, it's not at the top of our list of priorities. I finally joined the Academy last year. All these years, I never bothered.
50 years.
You know, and a couple other documentary filmmakers. You're not in the Academy. You have to be in the Academy. So this year, I actually voted. I think that's a whole show in itself, which I'm not the right person to have on. There are people who are really experts on that.
Well, one of the things we talked about when the Life Itself snub happened was just about the apparatus and what it takes to actually get a nomination for an Oscar, to get shortlisted and to get it. And Betsy, it falls a little bit more into your expertise at the Illinois Film Office, the idea of going to meet people, to have relationships, to let the Academy and Hollywood know that Kertemkwin exists and you know, it's almost, I hate to say the word, but the schmooze. What do you bring to the company in that regard?
Well, I would say that, A, it's not a, quote, problem to be fixed. I would say that the Kertemkwin work certainly transcends that sort of accolade, and that's not the point of the Cartemquin work.
Right,
it is absolutely not the end all be all. The Cartemquin work is the conversation. It's the impact, and of course, one could argue winning big awards helps get the word out about films. So that's certainly valid reason to want to win awards. But so I would say it's not a problem to be fixed. However, you know, I think that there is a certain style of film that is sometimes nominated for some of those awards that is not quite as observational and organic as some of the projects that Cartemquin does. They're perhaps sometimes a little more stylized, a little more glossily produced. And so very much the same way Gordon says that he's not looking to fit into Netflix's schedule. He's looking to have, what does he need to do to get Netflix to want his film? I think that Cartemquin needs to continue to do its really organically observational documentary work that will stand on its own, and that at the right moment, when the right film is there in a year where the other films that stand around it, that the nominations will come.
Well, you know, it's just interesting to me because I'm a Cartemquin booster. This might be the first time in history where a Netflix or an Amazon or other companies that are able to distribute films want that organic experience. They're not necessarily looking for the next quote-unquote because there's so many options. This is almost like a ripe time for Cartemquin and what you guys are doing to work together with your mission.
Sure. Those new platforms opening up, you know, we talked about that, have really been helpful to us. And we're on them. You know, they have our films. We haven't actually produced with them yet, but I wouldn't be surprised in the future if we do. I think, though, that we have a film coming out, Raising Vertee. It's going to be finished this year by Margaret Byrne. It's three boys, African-American, rural poverty in North Carolina, and it's a coming-of-age story. It's looking at these boys over several years as they struggle their way through high school and becoming men. And that's a film that, you know, we're going to have to come up with strategies, and we're going to have to find an audience for that film. We do a lot with outreach and engagement and trying to make sure that our films are not just getting, you know, broadcast, they're not just on Netflix, but they're also showing over here at the Cultural Center. They're showing in communities, church basements. They're showing in places where people are coming together, seeing a film, having a common experience, and that moves them then to get involved in something like education or that kind of thing.
Gordon Quinn, Betsy Steinberg, both the leadership of Cartemquin Films in studio at my guest at the big table tonight. When we come back, we'll take a break for the news. Let's talk about Chicago as a film town. We've seen a huge change in the way that Chicago embraces not just film but television and all the production that comes with it in the last decade. And a lot of that had to do with your work, Betsy. So when we come back, we'll talk more about that. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's the big table. My guests tonight, Betsy Steinberg, Gordon Quinn from Cartemquin Films here in Chicago. Betsy just started December 1st. Her previous job, she was the head of the Illinois Film Office here, which ushered in an entirely new era for not just the state of Illinois, but the city of Chicago. Revenue was up. Production was up. We saw so much more Chicago-based stuff. We saw Dick Wolf's Chicago PD and Chicago Fire, which is employing several of my friends. I'm Facebook friends with so many people who are like, hey, another season. I got it to work.
And Chicago Med.
Right. And then, and not only that, but just we've continued to see more and more film come here and shoot here. What is Chicago angling itself to be a film industry town? Can it be that? Can it be sort of a Hollywood East?
Or Hollywood on the Lake, as it's sometimes called. Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are certain fixed institutions in California that are never going to be the size and scope that they are out there here in Chicago. However, having said that, we have a really robust community and absolutely, positively the hardest working crew in the country. I mean, I had directors, big directors, new directors, directors from all over Los Angeles and New York tell me time and time again, my Chicago crew is by far the best crew I've ever worked with, which is not to say that it's only a crew town, but point is that's where Chicago shines a lot. And there's a tremendous amount of creative talent here as well, above the line creative talent. And I don't think that the goal should be to be Los Angeles. I think the goal should be to be Chicago.
I guess the question I would have is, you know, just from a from an industry standpoint, you know, this town is developing, the mayor is developing a tremendous tech sector. There's still a manufacturing base here in the city of Chicago. Can film and television and the entertainment, can that be a district in Chicago? Can Chicago sustain that?
Absolutely. And it's already started. I mean, there's been new infrastructure underway in town for years. There's a new soundstage complex that, you know, is got, I don't even know how many stages, though. There are 20-something stages to accommodate the volume of work in town. So absolutely, there can absolutely be, whether you call it a district or an industry, whatever you call it, it already exists. And frankly, it had existed for a really long time, thanks to John Hughes.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it was here. It just got a little bit quiet over several years when tax incentives were forcing people north of the border to do their projects.
Go ahead, Gordon.
I just want to come back to something because I think what Betsy was just saying, it's like from my perspective of having been here 50 years, well,
yeah.
We stay here because we view Chicago as a film town. We view it as a place that's a good town for documentary filmmaking. It's not as expensive to survive here as in some other cities. It's a much more flexible environment to work with. And you're in a world-class city. You're in a city in which there's all this incredible depth in the other arts. You know, there's I often say, you know, we have a very robust commercial industry
right.
here. Well, you're not going to have a commercial industry in a city where people can't see experimental filmmakers like are shown at Chicago Filmmakers or Facets and places like that. It's like people have to be plugged into the cutting edge culture on an international scale for those kind of industries to be here. And so in a lot of ways, you know, when we began, there was a lot of pressure on Cartemquin because most of our funding was coming from the East Coast, was coming from Boston and New York. And that's where the PBS outlets that we were working with.
And they were saying, come out here. We don't want to.
Yeah. And we really planted our flag here and never looked back. And I think now the city has, you know, it's been for a long time.
Well,
I view this as a very robust, powerful media environment that can compete internationally.
You know, one of the things that has to be there for any industry is funding. And, you know, for you guys, you've had – MacArthur has had, you know, you're back in a couple of films now. But as you move forward, are the funders going to be there? I mean, is there a nice funding community when it comes to producing documentaries or continuing – sans a tax credit?
I think absolutely. I think that there are local funding bases, people who – care about impact media, people who care about the sorts of issues that Cartemquin highlights. And to fund a film, it doesn't even have to be local. I mean, funding sources don't have to be a regional.
Right. You can get money from anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But having said that, I think that Chicago's got a very strong and committed community of funders, foundations, philanthropists who are very committed to the work that Cartemquin's doing.
You know, one of the things that happened when I stepped down as executive director, we had built our first board. And that first board was primarily people from the Human Rights Department at the University of Chicago, the Center for Social Media and Impact. You know, they weren't necessarily funders. Now we have a real mix on our board of people who are funders, who help us to raise money, and who are Chicago-based. I mean, look out your window. You know, we're not in some small town. We are in a city. And because what we do is something that someone has to sort of take a moment to kind of understand why this is so important, the fact that the people – I don't know if this is true, but I think it is – that I think that still the bulk of our funding, even though, you know, we have these broadcast partners nationally and internationally – I think the bulk of our funding is probably coming from the Midwest.
Mike Phyllis put in the article that you have a $3.5 million budget for 2016, which is really reasonable for a film company. You think of, you know, budgets we've been involved with. public media stations. You know, it's a lot bigger. But talk about the cost of documentary filmmaking. Has it changed? I mean, you see all the hoopla about I could do a video. I could do a film on my iPhone. You know, like I could do all this kind of stuff. Now, obviously, the artistic vision and the producers and the filmmakers bring their, you know, their expertise and everything to a project. But the actual technical part of making a film, has it gotten cheaper?
Sure. I mean, some things have gotten cheaper, and we're pretty much everything we do now is in the digital realm. But that's not where the cost is, and that's what people need to understand. It's like even if you're going to make a film with your iPhone, which I wouldn't recommend, but it's having the relationship with your subject, getting into the story and building that sense of trust, and then spending the time to follow that over time, which may be years, and then to get into the editing room and really craft a story, that's what costs the money. It's like, you know, people say, oh, we made our film for like, you know, $15,000, and I look at them and it's like, yeah, but you're not taking into account all the time you actually spent making your film. And so, yes, the technology's changed. We use all that. One of my mottos used to be we would like to be the last in the neighborhood with the new technology, because we're not a tech. It's not about the technology. It's about the storytelling, and we're always looking. So, in my office, I have a camera like Albert Maisel had in his office. It's the Cartemquin's first camera, which is kind of home built. Because at that time, to do the kind of filmmaking that we wanted to do, to record reality unfolding before the camera, you almost had to build your own. Now you don't, you know, and it's amazing how cheap you can get something really good for. But that doesn't change the bottom line that much.
How many films do you have in production at any given time? I mean, do you have a set number because of the budget, or is it just sort of fluid? How does it work at Cartemquin?
Well, I can speak a little bit to that. There is not a set number. It's a very dynamic situation, and it depends on how many projects, one, we feel fits the mission of the organization and what their funding capabilities are at any given moment. Sometimes it can be a little bit unpredictable when a film mm-hmm. gets funding. So there's a whole lot of factors that go into how many films are in the queue at any given time. I think there was a high in 2014 or 15 of about a dozen films. Am I correct, Gordon?
I think it was. I think it was even more. It
was
like at 14. But, you know, I always used to let Justine answer that question because the answer always frightened me. You know, when I actually looked at all the things that we had in progress, and I work primarily on the artistic side, so I'm working with the directors and the producers, and it's like, where are we going to find all the time to do this? So we have a lot of projects in the works, and a lot of projects that overlap, you know, where something is maybe on a hiatus because we're trying to raise the rest of the money.
Mm-hmm. How often does that happen where you get like three quarters through something and you're like, hey, we need some more
money? It happens.
Yeah.
It happens. I like to say to people that there have been a couple times when we received all the money up front and we finished the film in less than a year from the time we started it to, you know, Vietnam, Long Time Coming, which is one of the films I think we're going to be streaming as part of our 50th anniversary. We did the whole thing in a year, you know. So if the money's there and on the table, now some films like Hoop Dreams, you know, they filmed and followed those boys' lives for 4.5 years.
Wow.
Raising Bertie, the film I mentioned about North Carolina, that's the same kind of thing, where she followed them over all those years. But we also have issues of continually struggling.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, because you have a great relationship with Steve James, obviously. He's done a lot of the movies we're talking about, and he's got the new Oak Park series that's coming out soon. But what about the next generation of filmmakers? I mean, what is Cartemquin's role in partnering with some of the filmmakers that are coming up?
It's one of the aspects of Cartemquin that I find most exciting is our commitment to emerging filmmakers and to nurturing emerging talent. And we've got several programs, and we were a real media arts organization, not just film production per se, but we've got several programs that address the needs of emerging filmmakers, including our Diverse Voices in Docs program, where people on our staff work and mentor mid-career filmmakers of color.
And we do that in collaboration with the Community Film Workshop and Margaret Caples. I mean, it's the other thing about Chicago is that you've got all of these partnerships that you can form. And our attempt to address the diversity problem and getting more kinds of diverse filmmakers into filmmaking, we spent years working with them to develop what has now become a very successful program.
As we wrap up, I would love to ask both of you about the city. I mean, Gordon, one of the great things about the films we're talking about, whether it be The Interrupters or Hoop Dreams, is it shows a somewhat dysfunctional Chicago. It shows a Chicago that may not have its act together in some forms, or showing people Chicago in struggle. How much have your films and the films that you've done about this town influenced the way you see this town?
You know, I don't know if we're that different in that sense from any other city. I mean, I think that, you know, we're dealing with all of the problems here in Chicago that are the larger problems of America and race in America that's never been dealt with. But I do feel that by being here, what you see in so many of our films are Midwestern stories. Even in a series like Hard End, which was national, we made, you know, when you look at the series and say, oh, they're all over the country. They're telling stories in East Coast and the West Coast. But two of the stories are right here in Chicago, or, you know, in the suburbs, because it's what's outside our door. It's what's outside our window. And it is a rich, complicated environment. And the struggles and the stories that people have to tell are not necessarily the same stories that they have on the coast. And so I think for me, it's the diversity of Chicago. It's the flexibility of Chicago. It's the fact that you can actually live for a reasonable amount of money in Chicago, the depth of the arts community here in all the fields. I find it a very vibrant place to be doing what we're doing.
Betsy, you're back.
I've been here since 1998, and I felt at once everything was brand new and familiar. And I think it is, like Gordon said, I think it's a city of contradictions and complexities. I find complexity to be fascinating and beautiful, even when it's painful. And also, in my opinion, the most cinematic city in the country. There's no doubt about that to me whatsoever. And the, you know, you turn on a camera in Chicago and your production value is like unbelievable compared to so many places. So I feel like this has the perfect combination of, like Gordon said, the depth of the arts community and a general willingness and openness of people that work in that community to collaborate and to turn out some really amazing, unique work that stands on its own, apart from the coasts. You know, John McNaughton, a Chicago director, I once heard him say at an event, we shouldn't be defensive about being in Chicago. Being right. in Chicago is a great thing in and of right. itself, and I completely yeah. feel yeah. that and
Absolutely.
Believe it.
Let me ask you this as we wrap. Talk about what's next and what we're going to see in this 50th anniversary year.
Well, one exciting thing that's happening right now is we are really going to be streaming every week all of our back catalog. Right now, Home for Life, our very first film from 1966, is streaming off our website, and many of our other films are going to be streaming.
Beyond that, you know, TTW is broadcasting a Kartemquin film every month. There are screenings at Northwestern's Block Cinema. Frankly, there are going to be events around the country to commemorate this 50th.
Is it Kartemquin.com? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Kartemquin.com.
Yeah.
You can find all the information about the 50th anniversary of Chicago's iconic documentary film company. Gordon Quinn, Artistic Director, Founding Member, new Executive Director, Betsy Steinberg. Thanks for being my guest tonight on The Big Table.
Thank you.